B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
John DeServio, JD, bass player extraordinaire from Black Label Society, joins me today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. Of course, we had to get into how he first met Zach Wilde.
I heard about this sick guitar player that played in this local band, you know, where we live. And I was like, oh, really? So I went down there at Soundcheck to check it out, you know. Like 1987 it was. So I went down there in the daytime and checked him out. And I was like, oh, my God, this dude's sick.
Just like many rockers of our age, he was influenced heavily by Kiss as a child. He told me how that came about.
And my buddy goes, who's your favorite band? I said, Jethro Tull's the best. He says, no way, Kiss. I said, Kiss? Who the hell is Kiss? And he showed me that picture of them on the Empire State Building. I said, they're the best.
We got into what's going on with Black Label Society right now and also how they approach songs in the studio.
Mostly, you know, exactly just comes up with riffs, ideas, you know, and then we put them down. We, you know, make the song out of it, and then that's it. It's pretty easy. It's pretty simple. A lot of times we'll have, like, the whole song done, you know, and then we'll throw down the guitar first, and then we build, you know what I mean?
Plus, I have fan questions from Don Jameson from That Metal Show, David Ellison from Megadeth, Johnny Kelly from Typo Negative, and even hockey great Darren McCarty. It's JD, John DeServio, today on Talkin' Rock.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Time for another edition of the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. Thank you so much for tuning by. Talked with Johnny Kelly recently. John Five's been on this year. I've got some other interviews right now kind of working up in the process. It's been kind of a strange year, in case you didn't realize. So the interviews have been kind of few and far between as of right now. But we've been doing some on the Instagram, and when I do that, I kind of try to post them over here as well. But I've been talking to JD about getting him on the program for the last couple of months, and things just kind of worked up, and I've been looking forward to this conversation so much. JD's such a nice guy, and such a great talent, too, man. Talk about a killer bass player. He is awesome. So if you get a chance, punch up some of the stuff on YouTube and whatnot if you're not that familiar with JD's work. But, yeah, some really good stuff out there. Hey, listen, real fast, some house cleaning. In case you like this podcast, give it a 5-star rating, write a review on iTunes, Apple, the whole thing. Do appreciate that. That helps to spread the word as far as Talkin' Rock is concerned. But most importantly, thank you so much for listening. Hey, but enough of my yakking. Let's boogie. Let's get right at it. JD, how you doing, man?
Hey, Meltdown, what's happening, my brother?
I'm doing okay. We're all getting through this together, I suppose. And what have you been doing since this whole pandemic lockdown thing?
Well, you know, I've been doing a lot of stuff around the house. I've been taking care of my body, you know, shaving my legs like probably twice a week now because, I don't know, for some reason, this indoor stuff is just making me really, really hairy. So I got to take care of this stuff. But, you know, that's about it. Just waiting for rock and roll to come back, man. You know, this is crazy, bro.
Yeah. Is this like probably the longest time you've gone without, you know, gigging?
Oh, without a doubt. Longest time I've gone with a bunch of things, you know? I mean, showering, you know, gigging, you know, all kinds of. My girlfriend's really upset with me right now, but, you know, but it's all right. But, yeah, man, I mean, Zach, I don't think he's been home 4 months, you know, in a row since he was, like, 1 year old.
Right, exactly, yeah. And of course, you it seems like Zach has rubbed off with you with the shaving of the legs and the whole thing, so, you know.
He has. He's been a part of my life for 34 years now.
Yeah, we'll talk about that coming up here in a few, but have you been working on anything during the lockdown or anything that you can talk about?
Well, like I said, I've been working on my own music. You know, I got a studio at the house here in Jersey, so, you know, I'm always like playing bass or piano, guitar, or drums, or writing something. I just did a record for a buddy of mine, Michael Romeo. He plays in a band called Symphony X.
Okay,
he's a really sick musician. I mean, I just did his second solo record, so thankfully I got to do that. You know, during this time, yeah, man, it's been crazy. You know, and for the first month or two. Motivation was just really, really hard, dude. It was really hard. Everybody I know that I talked to was in the same boat. Everybody felt the same. It was really, really hard, but lately it's been better. You know?
Yeah, it's been getting better. How are things out there on the East Coast where you're at? Tell me about how life is like.
Jersey, yeah, it was, well, we got hit really hard, you know, at the beginning because we're right outside of New York City. So everywhere outside New York really got banged up, man. But now, supposedly, Jersey's like the best, you know, declining whatever state. So So everything's cool. You know, we have a park right next to my house, so we've been going there like every day, walking the dog, then outside, you know, so that's been cool. Some things are starting to open up again, you know, outdoor dining and stuff. So, you know, it's getting better. I just hope, you know, I know it's spiking up all over the country, though, in the south there. So hopefully, you know, I hope it's not as bad as it was in New York and New Jersey in the beginning when all these people were dying.
Yeah, I think that's some of the problem that they don't really talk about on the news. And listen, I'm not a doctor, nor do I play one on the radio. But
I don't even play one on the radio.
Yeah, right. But, you know, people in the South, I think that what's happening is it gets so hot, a lot of people go inside. And when they're inside, they're in the air conditioning and they're close to people, you know, and the whole thing. So that might be a problem, you know.
Possibly, you know, that definitely could be it because, it gets brutal down there in the summer, man.
Yeah. So when was the last time you talked to Zach or any of the guys in the band?
Oh, yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah, we talk, like, pretty much every day, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, just kind of touch base and see what's going on.
Yeah, he misses me.
Who doesn't?
He misses the mongoose.
Yeah.
He needs somebody to pick on, beat up on, you know. Do his laundry for him, so, you know, Barbara Ann's taking care of all that now. So, yeah, so I'm, you know, I'm out of work.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, looking for the next load of laundry for sure. So, so you were talking earlier about how you've known Zach for so long. So for people that don't know, you met Zach before he auditioned for Ozzy, correct?
Oh, yeah, man. About a year before... I heard about this sick guitar player that played in this local band, you know, where we live. And I was like, oh, really? So I went down there at Soundcheck to check it out, you know. And what year was this? Probably like 87 or something. Like 1987 it was. So I went down there in the daytime and checked him out. And I was like, oh, my God, this dude's sick. So we immediately became friends, went downstairs into the dressing room area, and we had a little amp there, and we were jamming. We were taking turns plugging in. Like, I borrowed his bass player's bass, and he was playing his guitar. We would take turns jamming using the cord, you know, like solo, and the other guy would play rhythm. And we both loved, like, Al Di Meola and Randy Rhoads and, you know, and all kinds of, you know, similar music like that. So we got along really well and just became bros, like, instantly, man.
Now, you have a Randy Rhoads room in your house, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The Rhoads Lounge in my
studio. Yeah, somebody just asked me in an interview I did, like, name, you know, three, like, great guitar players, and I had to put Randy Rhoads in there because, for me, for the small body of work he did and the influence he had three decades later is just unbelievable.
It really is. It's like, you know, the New and Old Testament. That's all he gave us, you know, the two records with Ozzy, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, he did the Quiet Riot thing before that, but for me, you know, he really, you know, came into his own when he was with Ozzy. His sound was better. Everything was better. I mean, because he had a lot of that material, you know, for years. I mean, he was only young when he died, man.
Right.
So imagine what he would have done, you know, after that. And he was always wanting to learn and take lessons and stuff. So he was really inspiring, and that's why me and Zach really loved him, you know. So, but, man, yeah, he really influenced the world amazingly with just those two records. I mean, Crazy Train still is played, you know, at Gillette Stadium and all these stadiums every year, every event, every sporting event, Crazy Train is played. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, and I mean, exactly. It's become such a, you know, a staple. And, you know, around the world, and, you know, it's so iconic. But, yeah, so was that kind of what, you know, did you guys bond right away over Randy Rhoads?
Oh, definitely. Randy and Al Di Meola and, you know, like stuff like that, you know, Sabbath, you know, Zeppelin, you know. So we were just jamming. And when we were young, I mean, we would just go over to people's houses and just jam, you know, like pick a key, you know, like E. Let's just jam an E or play a blues. And that's what we did, man, you know, and that's what we did growing up. And I don't know if a lot of kids are doing that nowadays like we did.
Right.
You know, it's a different world, you know. But, we totally, you know, we got along great. And, a year later, he's auditioning for Ozzy and he's getting it. You know, it was crazy.
So he gets this gig with Ozzy. And then you guys, I mean, this was before, like, cell phones and all this other stuff. So do you guys kind of go your own way? Is that when – now, did you go to school? Did you go to a music school?
I did.
Yeah.
I did. I went to Berklee College of Music in Boston.
Right.
And at that time, you know, you had the pay phones. You know, we had a pay phone in the hallway there.
Yeah.
So Zach was in a band, and they actually had a manager. You know what I mean? So he would go to the manager's house and call the pay phone in Boston so he wouldn't have to pay for it. And people are, you know, knocking on the door. JD, Zach's on the phone. Yeah, so I talk to him. And then I'm like, what's up, brother? He goes, dude, you're never going to believe this. He goes, I got an audition for Ozzy. I'm like, you're going to get it, you bastard. I know it. I knew it, man. And sure enough, he did. Thank God he had, we had friends that saw him playing, just in a club. This dude, Dave Felt, saw him. And then Mark Weiss was shooting Ozzy and photos with Ozzy. And Dave called Mark and said, I think I got Ozzy's guitar player. And sure enough, he did. So it's pretty sick. So ever since then, it's been crazy.
So at that time, so he goes off and does Ozzy and stuff, and you're watching him, I'm sure, from a distance, So was there ever a time you auditioned for Ozzy, or did you audition for other bands?
No, I never got to audition for Ozzy. But, I got other auditions, though, through Zach. Like, I played with Lita Ford back in, like, 90.
Right.
And I got that through Zach. He was managing Lita. At that time, they did, the Close Your Eyes for Everything with Ozzy and all that stuff. So I played with her through Zach, but I never got to play, and I never auditioned for Ozzy. I did jam with him once for a half a second, which was so, so cool, because I was at a rehearsal with Lita, and I'm just jamming on my bass. I'm just playing this little thing that I always play, whatever. It's like two chords, A9, A major 7, G9, G major 7. And Ozzy's like, oh, what's that? It sounds great. And he starts singing over it. I was like, oh, my God. I'm like 21 years old. You know what I mean? Or whatever. 22 years old. I'm like, I can't believe Ozzy's singing over something I wrote. That was pretty cool.
And so now do you know Ozzy pretty well now through Zach or what?
I mean, I've met Ozzy probably 50 times, and he still doesn't know who I am.
Hey, well, I'm going to be cool. I'm going to be honest. When you're as short as we are, sometimes people just look over us.
They look right past us.
That's right.
Totally, man.
So, that's great. So like, as a bass player and stuff, when you find out there's an opening in Metallica or something, do you ever throw your hat in the ring, or do you just kind of just, sticking with the thing?
Well, you know what? For a while, I wasn't in Black Label from 2000 to 2005. So in that time, I did audition for a couple bands and stuff, and I got accepted to play with Yngwie, and I didn't do it. I turned it down because I had another audition that I thought I was going to get with a bigger band, and I screwed myself. I should have just went out with Yngwie because he's like one of our heroes, man. He's a guitar legend. He changed the game as far as guitar players.
Uh-huh.
But, in that 5 years, I did a little bit, but I did a lot of playing at home, back in Jersey. I was, playing in cover bands and wedding bands and practicing drums and piano, just getting better on stuff in that 5 years there.
And you also did a little bit with Pride and Glory, right?
Oh, yeah, 94. The record came out in 93, and Zach was living out in L.A., Lomenzo played bass because he White Lion toured with Ozzy, so they all became friends and everything. And Lomenzo actually did the record, and then he wound up quitting or getting fired or whatever a year later. And then Zach called me, and I came in and finished in 94 with me, him, and Brian. And Brian Tishy, a buddy of mine. I met at Berkeley, and I got him the gig with Zach.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a killer record. Losing Your Mind, right? That's one of the songs, right? It's been so long since I've heard that.
That was the first song.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, it was good. Good music. Zach loves all, Allman Brothers and Skinner and stuff like that. So, yeah, he did a really good job with it.
Yeah, I think the first time I met Zach was in 1991, and I was a huge Ozzy fan growing up. I heard Crazy Train, you were just talking about, in, 82 or whatever on the radio, and it just, changed my life. Like, the first time I heard it, I'm like, oh, this is what I want. This is what I like. And so then fast forward about 8 or 9 years, I'm on the radio and I'm in Buffalo and I'm doing overnights because I'm just starting out, and I'm leaving the station at 6 a.m. and this tour bus goes driving by, and I thought, if that's Ozzy, because he was in town that night, I'm like, if that's Ozzy, I got to go see. Anyway, so I follow this tour bus like some punk kid, and it was the band. And I talked to Zach outside on the street in Buffalo at 6 o'clock in the morning for 15 minutes, mostly about football because his Giants had beaten my Bills the year before,
I do remember that.
Yeah. So, anyways, it was so cool to meet him that way, and he's always been really nice to me and stuff. Does he ever do anything on stage? I know that he likes. You see him on stage every night. He goes out to the crowd and stuff. Is there anything that's ever surprised you with his playing or his performance?
Maybe when he puked on stage, that surprised me a little bit, but that's probably it.
Yeah.
we were playing in San Francisco, and we went out for Chinese food an hour or two before the gig, And we were playing this song called What's in You? And the riff goes around, you know, dagger da down da blown da bound da dagger da bag da down. Right, a couple times, and the vocal comes in, right? So I'm waiting. The vocal never comes in. I'm like, oh, man, Zach must be really feeling this riff, man. He must be digging it, you know? So I turn around, and I look over. He's bent over in front of his cabinet, and he's puking. And I'm like, oh, no. And I look at him. He's like, just keep going. All right. And then he finishes, right? He finishes yakking in front of his cabinet. So he gives me the thumbs up. He's like, ready to go. I'm like, all right, cool. So he goes over to the mic. He starts singing. Right, he does the verse. It comes to the chorus, and there's this like scream part, and he just projectile vomits the whole verse.
Oh, oh my God!
It was pretty great, and the song was called "What's in You." And
right.
I was like, Zach, everybody knew what was in you then. You know what I'm saying? So then I texted him after the show. I said, if you were never my hero, I think you're my hero now.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, so that was pretty. That was surprising.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Yeah, you know, I saw you guys here. It was in the beginning of January a couple years back, and I don't think I actually talked to you that night. But I saw Zach, and I was with Darren McCarty, you know, on the side of the stage. And
you guys
were playing the Fillmore. And one thing that I don't know if it surprised me, but it was kind of noteworthy is that Zach plays his guitar with this piece of plastic over all of his foot pedals. For people that don't know, because he sweats all the time and he doesn't want to short anything out.
Oh yeah. Yeah, he's got like acid ring in his sweat. So he destroyed many wah pedals, distortion pedals. So then, years ago, then Moby then started putting the plastic over it, you know, and that definitely did the trick, you know.
Yeah, no, that's just like a little bit of inside baseball there for people that may not be that close to us.
Without a doubt, yeah, because when he's playing and he's right by the mic because he's singing, you know. So he's always jamming and his sweat just rolls right off of his elbow, I watch this all the time. You know, it's just like the falls, you know? And, so definitely we had some problems, though, too, because, you know, because he would short out his gear, like you said, and then we'd have to, you know, he wouldn't be playing for like a half a song, you know?
Yeah. So, you know, being a bass player and stuff, this is kind of funny, but I started kind of focusing on bass a few years ago when I heard this song Rats from Ghost. I'm like, because that song,
okay,
I never really paid much attention to the bass for that. For the most part,
no, nobody does. Nobody
right,
does no
but yeah, but then, but or the bass players, right?
Or the bass players,
right?
Exactly.
But then I started listening to that. You know what song I'm talking about, right?
I probably heard it. You know what I mean? I don't have their records, but I've heard them a bunch.
So. Okay, so anyways, but the bass line was so simple and so put out there and so easy, and I'm like, wow, that's amazing. So I started listening to bass players. So I've got a list of like some of the guys who I really like. So who are some of your bass playing heroes?
Well, growing up, you know, Steve Harris,
yeah,
you know, from Maiden, obviously, you know, Geddy Lee, you know, Geezer Butler, a bunch of the rock guys. Well, when I was, you know, growing up, I loved early Aerosmith and stuff, Tom Hamilton. I mean, I loved the first Motley Crue. I loved Dickie Six. I was like 13 or 14, you know, but then as I, you know, I got into more music, I got into like, you know, like I said, like Al Dimeola. And people like that, and Jaco Pastorius, you know, Al's a great guitar player, but I loved a lot of guitar players, but anybody really influenced me. As far as bass players, though, my all time favorite now is James Jamerson, you know, from Detroit, there,
right,
Motown,
right,
King, and he's the godfather of bass. He's the, you know, actually he's more than that. He's everything. He really is the pontiff, you know, and everybody has been influenced by him on bass, whether they know it or not, because he was the first really, really melodic, beautiful, you know, sounding bass player that just, you know, really infiltrated radio on everything. And he was amazing. And him and Jaco are my two favorites. And there's just so many. There's just so many more. I love Sly and the Family Stone. I like a lot of funk music, you know, because the bass is really ripping in that music.
Yeah, it's really up front. So, yeah. You know, James Jamerson, I got to get a little bit more into. Robert DeLeo said the same thing. You know, he's influenced by him.
Robert's another one. He's great. He's
awesome.
Really great bass
player.
Really good. And, yeah, there's a lot of really great, great bass players out there. But, yeah, me and Robert got to play. We did... was a man party for Samson or somebody, Harkey, and they were honoring Jamerson. So Robert got to play, and I got to play, and we became friends and stuff. And it was dope, man, you know, because there's all these people from Detroit there, and everything's like, oh my God, this is where it happened, you know what I mean? So it was pretty awesome. I remember I got them doing my, you know, my rehearsal, and then somebody goes, man, you sure you ain't from Detroit? I'm like, oh man, my heart is, you know. But, because not many people really even know that, you know, coming from a metal band. But I'm like, yeah, we love soul music so much. You know, Zach loves soul music. You know, we both do. Yeah.
Right. And you know, during this lockdown, it's given me a chance to watch a lot of documentaries, this and the other thing. But I just watched that documentary that Robert Trujillo did on Jaco Pastorius. I didn't really know much about him. I've talked to a lot of guys that brought his name up before, but I never really knew about him. And that was really interesting. Yeah. Have you seen that doc?
No, I haven't. I saw bits and clips of it, but I didn't see the whole thing from start to finish. But I'm a huge Jaco fan, you know. So there's a biography on him from some guy. I think it's Bill Majowski. You should really check that book out. I mean, it's insane, you know. I mean, it really. He was such a genius, but he was just troubled, you know. And it was very sad and tragic how he died, man. I mean.
Yeah,
crazy,
penniless and homeless,
And beat to death, bouncer, dude. I mean, that's freaking horrible. And, that dude killed the greatest bass player who ever lived, possibly, you know, which is pretty insane. But he was in a band called Weather Report for a bit there. It was amazing. That's where I heard his solo record first, but the Weather Report stuff was amazing. He played with Joni Mitchell on so much great stuff. I mean, he was just amazing. And he called himself the Sid Vicious of jazz.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because you say you're a big fan of his. I think he was a bigger fan of his than you are.
Oh, Dad, I heard he was.
Yeah.
A big fan of him. He would go into a record store and take the friggin' Weather Report records and take them and say, these are mine. And leave, like, you know what I mean, and sell them or whatever. You know what I mean? He was a bad shit, man.
So you mentioned Detroit, right? And it's like Detroit's played a big part in your life with the Motown and whatnot. But also, was the first concert you ever went to Bob Seger?
It definitely was.
Was
man.
It really?
It totally was.
Okay.
Yeah, another Detroit guy.
Yeah, and
yep,
I remember my brother, I was like,
yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I heard the story about how, you know, Elta Reed was playing up in the second level or something by you or something like that, the sax player? Yeah.
Yeah. Totally, man. Yeah, we're at the concert. The whole thing was like, what was it, 1980? I think I was like 12 years old. And my brother Pat and his friends were going to a concert. And all I wanted to do was go to concerts. I wasn't allowed. You know, I was too young. So I remember I was all pissed off, and I go up like two houses up to my buddy's house. And we're playing like Kill the Guy with the Ball on His Lawn.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And my brother drives up, and he beeps the horn. He's in the car. He goes, you want to go to the concert? I was like, yeah, I got to go get my jacket. He goes, I got it in the car. I was like, that's so dope. So, so we went there at Nassau Coliseum, 1980. And, it was just sounded amazing. And then, Alton Reed was soloing, and he was gone from the stage, and nobody knew where he was. Then they shined a spotlight up in the second level on one, like, high note, and he was there. I was like, oh, my God, that was, like, the best thing ever.
Yeah.
So now Zach does it. So that's cool.
That's right, exactly. Yeah, see, I remember I watched Bob Seger sound check one time, and he played Turn the Page. I'm like in this empty arena watching Bob Seger play Turn the Page. It was like incredible. And I've had a chance to meet him a few times. He's such a nice guy. Elta Reed's like a friend of mine. They're such good people.
Wow, that's so awesome.
Yeah, because, you know, being that's here and stuff, awesome. You run into people and you bump into people, you know, like that. But also with another Detroit connection, so your big introduction to rock and roll was Kiss.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Cobo Hall,
yeah. With Cobo, right there. Yeah. I saw, you know, Kiss's last performance there and stuff. I'll text you later on a video I did there. But anyways, so you were influenced and stuff by Gene and whatnot, obviously, you know, with the
That's right. I didn't even mention that. He's the the reason I play, man.
Yeah.
I mean, Kiss is the reason I play music. Because, you know, I was a kid. I was like, you know, third grade. I was 8 years old. I had older brothers, so I loved Zeppelin and Sabbath, like I said. And Jethro Tull was my favorite at the time because he said, you got him by the balls. You know, I was like, oh, my God, it was so cool. You know, and my buddy goes, who's your favorite band? I said, Jethro Tull is the best. He says, no way, Kiss. I said, Kiss? Who the hell is Kiss? And he showed me that picture of them on the Empire State Building. I said, they're the best. I was like, that's it. What does this guy do? And he said, he plays bass. I said, well, I'm playing bass.
There you go. So have you been able to meet Gene?
I never met Gene. I met Paul. I've met Ace. I'm friends with Eric, you know. I met Paul in a music store in L.A. His son was taking lessons from a buddy of mine, and I got to actually meet his son, and then I met Paul. I was like, oh, my God, this was so dope, man. That was cool.
Yeah, it's so funny the amount of guys I talked to that were influenced by Kiss that are like our age. You know what I'm saying? Everybody was influenced by Kiss, it seems like.
Yeah. If you're 50 years old, man, you were definitely influenced by them, I'm sure.
Now if I go back and, like, obviously I don't play bass or nothing, but I think, to me, one of the greatest bass players I've heard in my life is Chris Squire.
Oh, he was great, man.
You know, that 70s and 80s Yes stuff is so great.
And there were the players back then were just so good, man. They were really just – they were better. They, you know what? It was a lot less to do, so you spent a lot more time on your instrument. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
You're playing with other people and interacting with people.
Right.
Not on a computer or, you know, on an iPhone, you know what I mean?
Right.
You had to go over to somebody's house and jam or go to I went to this club because I heard about this great guitar player, you know? It's just a different world now.
Yeah, it's just definitely a different world than the last 4 months, that's for sure.
Oh, God, I know. This has been brutal, man.
Hey,
how's it out there?
You know, it's okay. It is what it is. I mean, you know, you go about with life and you try to do the best you can, you know. I mean, like, probably like everywhere, you know. Hey,
yeah.
A couple more things here before I get into some listener questions. Those videos you guys do on Instagram are so funny. So who comes up with those?
Well, Zach's the orchestrator, but, you know, we all hold your hand. You know?
Right.
We work him up. Me and him pretty much work up, you know, a lot of the stuff. It's mostly him, but, you know, then I come in and you know, be the associate producer.
No, it's so much fun to watch. Zach's Instagram account is hysterical when he does some of his stuff.
It's the best.
So, all right, here's some listener questions. Are you ready?
Yep.
All right, some guy named Darren McCarty wants to know when the last time you cut your hair was.
That time he was at my house 10-20 years ago. It's been a long time.
Yeah, it's been a long time. Hey, all right. Some guy named Don Jameson wants to know about the wicked wiffle ball skills you have and trying to find places to play on tour. So what do you got to say about that?
That was so fun, man. Well, I got to do the Zach Sabbath run in August. Well, I saw you at the machine shop there. I get to send you the picture.
Yep.
We would, because it's so boring, man. I mean, on tour, a lot of times as a musician, there's a lot of time, a lot of downtime.
Right.
So, and Donnie was out with us. He was the opening act, which was so amazing because I know Donnie since he worked at MTV like 30 years ago or something. And we're big sports fans, you know, baseball, hockey, everything. So we were like, let's just go out and play some wiffle ball, you know, get away from, you know, the venue, you know, for a couple hours, go have some fun. And we would find tennis courts, man. We brought like a piece of cardboard with us for the strike zone. It was pretty awesome. We'd have the runners find a, you know, big tennis court for us, and it turned out to be an amazing wiffle ball field.
And where was that actually? Yeah. You kind of cut out a little bit. Where was the field?
Oh, any tennis courts.
Oh, okay. Oh, tennis courts.
Okay. We would travel around because it was perfect because you would pitch over by the net, you know what I mean,
okay,
in the middle there, and you go against the fence. You know, that's your home base, and then the whole field. You know, if you get it over the net, it's a double. You know, and then that helps you when it's only two of you because if you hit a ground ball, the net will stop it.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And you chase the ball. It was really amazing. So yeah, it was a lot of fun there, man.
Yeah, that's cool. You know, you mentioned something there I want to touch on real briefly. You say that, like, you know, when you're out there touring, you know, you do your sound checks, you do meet and greets and whatnot, and then you guys play and stuff. But you have, like, another 20 hours to kill. And I've talked to some of my friends.
Yeah.
I've talked to some of my friends in bands that have literally become alcoholics because of the time they're trying to kill. You can probably see how that could happen, eh?
Yeah, it does. You know, I mean, yeah, when we were younger, we drank way more than we did.
Right.
But, now we play wiffle ball. easier on your liver, you know?
Yeah, no doubt. All right, some guy named David Ellison wanted to know, how did you learn Sir Duke for the Nam Jam with Stevie Wonder?
Well, patiently, and I totally took my time, made sure I knew every note. I mean, Nate, it was so great because Nate Watts plays with Stevie Wonder, and they were honoring Nate at one of these Nam parties, and Nate called me and said, JD, I want you to play Sir Duke, man, because that's a motherfucker. I'm like, oh, my God, really? Like, awesome. So I was like, oh, yeah, man. So, I got to play that. I got to do so much great stuff at Nam through Harkey and Samson. I really couldn't thank them enough. I met so many great people. Like we said, Nate, you know, and he would tell me stories. You know, he's another Detroit guy. And he would tell me stories about Motown. He would go over to where they were recording and look in the window in the basement and see Jameson playing. And he would tell me stories that Jameson called him son and he called Jameson dad. You know what I mean? So it was pretty awesome, man. And, that was a lot of fun. And Nate's the nicest guy in the world, man. So I was honored to be a part of that.
And I got another question here for you from an unnamed person. It says, who is your favorite drummer to play with on tour, and why was it Johnny Kelly? So I don't know who submitted that question. So,
well, it was Johnny Kelly for three reasons. Handsome. Great hair. His hair is great. Right. He always took nice care of his hair. Big Kiss fan.
That's true. Yeah.
Big Rangers fan, so that's where we really hit it off.
Now, are you more of a Rangers or a Devils guy?
Rangers.
Rangers,
man.
Okay.
I got my green shirt on. I actually live in this thing, but whatever. it's when I was a kid, there was no Devils. You know, there was no Devils.
That's
in the
true.
Kid,
yeah, so. That's true. Yeah.
So we rooted for the Rangers. You know, I don't know why, because we never won.
Well, 94 they did.
Oh, yeah, after they're going to be chanting that in 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, come on, 1940.
Yeah.
That was great. But that was such a magical time when they won it, man. It really was.
Hey, speaking of.
And your team won it 2 years later then, finally.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, in 97 we won the first one, and then 98 as well, and then 2002. That 2002 team, by the way, I mean, we could talk about that all day long. I believe there's 10 guys that were on that team that are in the Hall of Fame right now, and there's probably a couple more that are going to go.
I know, man. It's what the talent on that team were so amazing. I mean, the Russian Five. It was really crazy, man.
That's a great documentary if you got a chance. By the way,
I did see it.
Yeah, that's really cool. It brought back a lot of memories, and of course, you know, Darren was in it quite a bit.
Oh, I know, man. And poor Vladdy, man. That was just so sad.
That guy could have been. Who knows how good he would have been.
I mean, how great was he, and how good, how was he built for the playoffs? I mean, he was nasty.
Yeah, for those
they might have won another one.
Oh, yeah.
One more.
For those that are listening that don't know, Vladimir Konstantinov got in a car accident, in a limo accident, 7 days after winning the Stanley Cup the first time.
Yep.
Limo guy hit a tree in the middle of a median, and he never played again. He had, you know, closed head injuries and stuff, and he's still around. What a nice guy. I had a chance to meet him a few times, and just a nice guy.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. We were all, you know, sad about that. That's terrible. You know.
Hey, a couple more things here, and then we'll cut you loose. You just mentioned you're always wearing your Rangers gear and whatnot. So with the Black Label Society like jackets, the vests, do you have to earn those, or you just get one when you get in the band?
Well, you have to earn it when you get in the band.
Gotcha. Okay.
I can't go into what it entails.
Okay.
It's not fit for radio. That's all I'm saying about that.
All right.
But yeah. Zach's a crazy bastard. Yeah. So, yeah. But I'm only kidding. It's, you get it when you get in there. But, and then, you know, we've been selling them now for years. So pretty much everybody's got one, you know. All the fans have them. I mean, it's pretty sick when you see our show. And everybody in the crowd has Black Label stuff on. It's pretty sick.
Yeah, that's awesome. Hey, so, can you give us an update on what's going on with Black Label? Is there anything you can report, or is it just kind of like everything else, just kind of on hold?
Yeah, like everything else. I mean, we were supposed to have a record recorded already, you know, so who knows when that's going to happen. Stay tuned, hopefully sooner than later. And, you know, all the shows, I mean, I think they all got canceled this year for everybody.
Yeah.
Which really, really sucks. But I think we're definitely going to be doing a new record. So keep tuned for that one.
Do you guys have anything written? Do you have anything, or just kind
of? I'm sure Zach's got a bunch of riffs written.
Okay, so
do
you guys go into the studio like with a clean slate, or do you go in with ideas already?
Nah, well, it's mostly, you know, it's Zachy just comes up with riffs, ideas, you know, and then we put them down, we, you know, make the song out of it, and then that's it. It's pretty easy. It's pretty simple. A lot of times we'll have, like, the whole song done, you know, and then we'll throw down the guitar first, and then we build, you know what I mean? But a lot of times we'll just be in the studio, and he comes up with stuff, and then we just start jamming on it, and then make that a song, you know? Like, Crazy Horse was the last song written on that Order of the Black record.
Mm-hmm.
And that, it was the opening song,
right? You know?
But it's crazy because we had to spend an extra week doing something, and if we never did that extra week, we wouldn't have gotten a couple of them songs, which is pretty cool. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Now let me ask you this question. This might sound a little ridiculous since I'm not a musician, but with mm-hmm. your schooling and bass and stuff, I don't even know how to phrase this. Is there sometimes when you got to, like, I'm not going to say like dumb down your bass, but is there sometimes where you want to get a little more intricate, but it just doesn't fit the song, and so you got to kind of pull it back a little bit?
Well, you know what? Yeah, you have to play for the song. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter if you could do your best Jocko impersonation. You know,
right?
It doesn't fit the song. It's silly. You know what uh-huh. I mean? It's just like, and especially bass. We're an accompanist. You know, we're an accompaniment. You know, we're support.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we get a chance to shine. You know, and we move the songs around too, just with our bass lines. You know, but they just gotta fit the song. You just can't be wanking for, you know, just because you want to show off. You know what I mean? That's mm-hmm. That shit went out the window years ago, man. You know, after you grew up, when I was, you know, like 46, then I grew up. You know.
Yeah, not that long ago. Yeah, right. So, well, that's cool. And I love your strings. You know, does Fieldy does something like that too? Doesn't he have colored strings?
Actually hooked me up with my company.
Nice, because I'm trying to think of is there any other bass players that I would know that I can't think of any other ones.
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, I always, when I was a kid, I used to use these strings called D'Addario Epson Reds, and they were red. I thought they were the coolest thing. So I've been using red strings since I was like 15, you know?
Yeah.
But then and then I got with companies, you know, and then I would use their form of it or whatever. But then DR really has been doing it for a long time, and they do a great job with it. So, like when we go overseas, we make like a flag of the country,
right?
You know, with the colors of the strings and stuff. And I thought that was cool. You know, some of the fans get it. You know what I mean? Some of them are like, "Oh, that's so cool!" You know,
yeah.
But, you know, it's cool. Yeah, that's DR. That's my string company.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I remember seeing that on stage, and then I saw you mention that about the flag thing. Yeah, next time you come through Detroit, you have to put the red and white there on there for the Red Wings.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to have to do it for the Wings. Yeah.
Well, listen, JD.
My Darren jersey.
Yeah, there you go. Wear your D-Mac. Yeah, of course, I'm sure he'll be there somewhere.
I'm sorry, D. I got to wear my Stevie Y.
Stevie Y.
I wear my husband.
Yeah.
I got to wear that.
Like I said, I think I told you I played hockey with him 4 times.
That's insane.
And it was pretty remarkable. And what a guy. And I'll tell you what, I could tell you Stevie Y and Nick Lindstrom. I played hockey with Nick Lindstrom like 30 times or 40 times during the lockout in 04.
Wow.
Yeah, 04, 07. I played with all those guys, Chelios and Hatcher and Draper. I played 3 days a week with them.
Crazy.
Yeah, it was.
That's amazing.
I was just glad they didn't kick me out, because my friend was, and still is Brian Smolinski. And he says, "You got to come play hockey with us." And so I said, all right.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Was he Boston?
Yeah, he played for Boston, played for the, I think he played for the Islanders for a little, but he played a bunch of teams, yeah.
Yeah. I remember him.
Well, anyways, JD, I'll tell you what, we'll cut you loose here. Thanks so much for the time, and I'll tell you what, you got to promise me that when things get back to normal, you got to come back on somewhere mid-tour and talk rock with me again.
No problem, man. Love you, man. Appreciate you, buddy.
Great stuff from JD today in the Talking Rock with Meltdown podcast. Hope you guys dug that. It's so funny how Kiss and Randy Rhoads, too, have played such an instrumental part in some of your favorite rockers' upbringing. I mean, it's kind of amazing, all the guys I talked to. Like I mentioned, David Ellefson in there, huge Kiss fan growing up. Johnny Kelly, huge Kiss fan. We talked about that on the last podcast as well. And it was a different time back then. It's like, without the social media, there was really a mystique and an intrigue about a lot of these bands. And so you never saw the guys without their makeup on. That was always the big thing. Like, paparazzi was always trying to catch them without their makeup on and different things like that. And nowadays, there's not much intrigue, not much behind the scenes. Remember when Tool first started out? I remember when Tool first started, actually, you know, when they were a couple years in and they were successful, one of their records went on sale at midnight at, like, you know, the record stores around the country. And I want to say it was in Tower Records. There was this big, long line of people outside Tower Records to buy the new Tool record. And I don't know if it was Danny Carey or Justin Chancellor. One of the guys from Tool was actually in the record store shopping for records while fans were buying Tool albums, and nobody knew it was them. Because, you know, this is before the internet and everything, and there was a lot more, secrecy and a lot more, you know, behind the scenes that people didn't realize. I'm not sure if that's a true story or not, but I could see it definitely happening. Hey, like I said at the beginning, 5-star ratings, reviews on Apple and iTunes, and of course, share this with your buddies. And I can't wait to get back to a live music, hopefully sooner rather than later. In the meantime, thank you so much for checking out Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.